Did you know that you can become an Assembly Audible podcast sponsor? Assembly Audible has multiple sponsorship opportunities, including the chance to record live and in person at the Assembly Show in October. Check out our website and feel free to reach out about our podcast sponsorship opportunities. And now let's get into this new episode of Assembly Audible. Hello and welcome to Assembly Audible. I'm your host, Jennifer Pierce, multimedia content specialist with Assembly Magazine. Manufacturers are becoming increasingly concerned with the environmental impact of their assembly operations and the products they churn out. They are using more recycled materials and designing products to be reused and recycled. Manufacturers are evaluating the environmental effects of their products across their entire life cycles, from raw material production to use and obsolescence. I'm joined today by Dr. Julia Goldstein, materials scientist, journalist, and author of the book, Material Value, More Sustainable, Less Wasteful Manufacturing of Everything from Cell Phones to Cleaning Products. Julia, welcome to Assembly Audible.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you so much. Okay, so before we launch into some questions, would you mind just to give us a brief overview or expand a little bit on the intro? Tell us a little bit about your work. How did you become interested in materials and sustainability?
Well, I've been a materials geek ever since I took Intro to Materials Science as an undergrad, and I decided to major in it. I became so fascinated that I got a PhD in materials science. But back then, I didn't really think about all the environmental and public health impacts of these fascinating materials that engineers were inventing. That thinking has kind of evolved more recently. And it really accelerated when I decided to write the book, Material Value. When I said, I want to write a book about materials, I want to really write also about those environmental and health impacts. And then again, as I've gone in, I've done my business, JLFG Communications, does consulting and contract writing. I really like those stories where I can share what my clients are doing to reduce water use or get rid of toxic compounds in their manufacturing processes. And those are the favorite stories that I like to tell. And they have become so important to tell. I mean, it's always been important. In the last couple of years, more people are aware of it.
Definitely seems very relevant.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, great. Thank you so much. Okay. Materials and processing methods are usually chosen with performance as the key metric. Where does environmental impact enter into the material selection calculus?
Well, historically, it often has not been a priority because you're absolutely right. Performance. They need the materials to be strong, light, whatever it is, you know, these particular properties. I mean, it's fascinating to be able to do that. I believe that the environmental aspect needs to come in really early in the process. It needs to be part of design. Design engineers need to work with suppliers and need to get the whole picture. Not just, I mean, you can't sacrifice performance. If you provide a product that is made from 100% recycled content and, you know, no toxic chemicals, great. If it doesn't work, it's irrelevant. Nobody's going to buy it. Or if you make it and it seems good, but it breaks really soon, well, shoot, then you're creating more waste. So it really needs to be a holistic look at the performance, the durability, and all those environmental aspects together.
That's great. That is really inspiring, you know, and I hope that we see improvements in the future, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. There's definitely more interest. Those designers and product designers, suppliers, they want to know.
Right. That's great. Okay, so where does cost fit in? If a more sustainable material or process is more expensive than a conventional one, how can engineers justify the investment?
that is one of the big blocks. That's one of the big obstacles. The thing is, I think that a lot of times they just look at, oh, this costs so many dollars per kilogram. And that's the only thing that they're looking at. If you look at the whole picture, it really might not be as expensive as you think. And there's ways to phase things in. There's also, well, what if you can make it more long-lasting? If it's a longer-lasting, more durable, robust product, like manufacturers used to make 50, 60 years ago. I mean, people probably might have stuff from their grandparents that has lasted for decades and decades. And then they have something they bought 5 years ago and it's already falling apart.
It's true.
So if you can do the more sustainable products, more sustainable materials, and increase the durability, then it becomes more valuable. The other thing is, where can you pass those costs on, right? How much is the manufacturer going to absorb? Also, can you work with suppliers to allow them to increase the volume of their manufacturing? Because if there's new materials and they're being made on a small scale, mm-hmm. the cost is going to be high initially. If the volumes scale up, the cost comes down. That's pretty much a universal concept. So if the manufacturers can drive that increased demand and drive the volumes up, they can drive the costs down. And again, sometimes they can pass some costs on to consumers, especially early adopters who want to have that more sustainable product and are willing to pay more, with ultimately the goal being to bring those costs back down so that everybody can afford those products.
That's so interesting. In your opinion, what do you think? Do you think that the average consumer cares about this, about quality and sustainability? Or do you think that people want things for less and faster?
I think it depends on who you talk to. I mean, in my world, I feel like, oh, yes, everybody is on board with this. And I realize that to some degree, I'm in a bubble. Mm-hmm. But more and more consumers are aware of it. And more the surveys that come out and say, are you going to pay more for an environmentally responsible product? Or do you care how your products are made or where mm-hmm. they're made or what's happening to the workers or what's happening to the environment? I don't have numbers right now off the top of my head, mm-hmm. but there's been huge growth, especially in the last couple of years, of the number of people who say, yes, we care about this. There's also part of that is generational. If you're talking to people under 35, you're going to get a different answer than if you're talking to people over 50. Not that none of the old people care, and not that all the young people do, but in general. And as you bring more young workers into the workforce, they're going to start demanding that their employers show that they care about these things.
I love that. I know we're going off script a little bit, but I'm genuinely interested. And as you were speaking, you know, I thought of a couple of things. First, I feel like you can feel the, in some instances, not every brand or every store, but I feel like you can feel the decline in quality, you know, whether it's retailers. So I do feel like people would pay more for something that feels better or has, you know, more value, is higher quality. And then the other thing I thought was, is it possible if manufacturers are using, you know, higher quality materials or whatnot, that they could almost, if people were paying more, could they also include some kind of, maybe not a lifetime warranty, but say, yes, this costs more, but we're guaranteeing that this will last you for X amount of time.
Exactly. I think I even give an example in my book of, are you going to buy the $30 shoes that will break right after you've worn them a few times? Or are you going to buy the $150 shoes that are going to last you for 10 years.
And won't give you back problems.
Well, okay, you know? I don't want to even get into high heels, okay? I'm not going there. I'm wearing flip-flops. That's the great thing about working from home. They're really comfortable. Anyway, the other piece is educating the customers. Because if they're used to, oh, this kind of product costs this amount of money. Or they're... And it's a really difficult thing with fashion and clothing. And people are like, oh, I want a new one. You can shop secondhand and consignment and get some really good quality stuff that somebody else has worn. The message, though, that yes, it comes with a longer warranty. And I have seen that. Sometimes there will be different grades of products. Mm-hmm. Do you want one with a 1-year warranty or a 5-year warranty?
Oh, that's interesting.
There's also new rules coming up in Europe about right to repair.
Oh.
And the idea that, and that especially applies to electronics, but the idea that we, when we buy something, should be able to repair it. That's how things used to be long, long ago. They can be that way again, but it really requires a lot of rethinking about things. So, I mean, part of reducing waste, it's, yes, it's about what you're using to make your products, what materials you're using, but it's about the durability and it's about how long you're expecting the things to last. And then are the manufacturers willing to repair the products free or at very low cost to keep them in circulation?
I see. It sounds like it's a commitment, but people who are willing to make the commitment, it works.
Yeah. I mean, it's a commitment from both sides. We need individuals, consumers, businesses, governments. We need everybody to help.
Okay. Well, that leads us into our next question. What are some simple ways that manufacturers can lower their carbon footprint and reduce waste?
It really depends. I can't say like there's one universal thing to do. It's about really taking a look at your entire operations and say, where are the easiest places to make the greatest difference? Now, one thing when it comes to reducing waste is you can look at things like scrap rates. What are the processes? It's auditing your process. Are there ways that you could change things so that you're creating less scrap or so that you can have ways to reuse it inside your factory, ideally? I mean, that's a type of recycling, just the idea that you could say, if you have metal scraps, gather them all up, remelt them. There you go. You've got new metal. That's a fairly standard way to do things. There's also chances to do more creative thinking. Maybe there's a company in a different industry that could use your scrap. And then there's also things like energy use. Are you operating your buildings in the most energy efficient way? Or are you keeping things running 24/7 when you don't need to? I mean, there can be just simple things like making sure the lights go off automatically if nobody's in the building, not running equipment when it doesn't need to be used. And maybe finding more efficient ways. Maybe you can share equipment amongst different groups. There's no one answer. It really kind of depends on your processes, but you also might find leaks in the system that you can fix.
Is there such a thing, and maybe this is going to sound silly, but is there such a thing as like a cooperative where there's like a group of manufacturers who could potentially work together and say, well, we have this, or share information or even materials to find solutions?
I think especially in the construction industry, there are resources for putting up materials, excess materials that you don't need that some other company can then buy. So there are some of those, and they're usually kind of local. I know there's one in Portland, Oregon. The Rebuild Center. I should look and make sure I get that right. But in any case, those tend to be industry specific.
I see. Okay.
But there's opportunities for cross-industry collaboration. I think Dell Computer has done a number of things in that area.
Interesting. Okay, well, thank you. Okay, so planned obsolescence seems to be ingrained in the electronics industry. How can that industry be more sustainable?
Planned obsolescence is something that I have written about many times. It's a matter of, ideally, I'd like them to take some of the models in Europe. For example, Fairphone, which has modular phones that customers can then replace the battery. So people who have a Samsung or an iPhone, and if you look, the whole thing is just one piece, right? It's all one piece. I can take off this separate blue case. But otherwise, I can't take it apart and do anything with it. Actually, this is a Samsung and they have a terrible rating on repairability. Anyway, it's a fine product. However, from a point of view of repairability, no. I kept my old one until I got to the point where it could only hold a charge for about 45 minutes. It was just having so many problems. I said, okay, I'd had it for, I think, 6-7 years, which is a long time for a phone, that's an unfortunate thing anyway. So more modular design, but also repairability. And I think some of these laws are going to help with that. The other thing is to improve e-waste recycling rates. That's where manufacturers have take-back programs. Mm-hmm. And some of these things can work really well. One really cool example is from the Tokyo Olympics, where they did this whole collection. This is in, I think, 2017 and 2018, where they had these special kiosks in Tokyo and surrounding areas where customers could drop their phones. They extracted the metals from those phones. That's what e-waste processing does. It extracts the metals, especially gold, because it's the most valuable. But you can get a lot of other different metals. All of the medals that the Olympic athletes wore at the Olympics, the 2020 Olympics that happened in 2021. Anyway, when I first wrote about it in 2019, they were going to happen in 2020. Anyhow, right. All of those for the gold, silver, and bronze medals were made from reclaimed metals from cell phones.
That is super cool.
They collected something like 5 million cell phones, which was even more than they needed. Now, again, this is a special situation. Why not, though, make that the default way to do things?
Well, and that's neat. Conceptually, I think that could be a selling point. Like, how many people used, maybe not directly, but that's kind of cool. It's like how many different devices or things went into that one new decorative, item. It's fascinating. Yeah, that's really cool.
But really, when you can take the gold, just gold, for example, out of cell phones, mm-hmm. and it's much more efficient than mining it from the earth.
Fantastic. Okay, great. Thank you. Can you provide an example of a manufacturer that is doing a good job in terms of environmentally responsible design and production?
I've listed a few. Another one that comes to mind is Brewer Science. They're based in Rolla, Missouri, which wouldn't necessarily, it's kind of like in the middle of nowhere. No offense to anybody.
Hey, it's pretty close to where I live, so.
Yeah, no offense to anyone who lives there.
No, it's true.
It's not even a big city. That company is the first and only B Corp certified company in semiconductor manufacturing. They make a variety of different chemicals and materials for the semiconductor industry. They have been certified zero waste to landfill every year since 2015. And that certification requires them not to send any of their waste to landfill. Now, that means there's multiple options. Some of it is getting recycled. Some of it is getting burned for energy. They use that energy within their building to heat the buildings and provide electricity to run the equipment. So that is, because I know that there's some really kind of concern about waste for energy, you know, waste to energy not being the best way. And I would agree. So the first thing is to reduce. Also, they've even found ways to filter some of that hazardous waste, make sure it's not going into the environment, make sure that all the hazardous stuff is being handled properly. But some of that can even be filtered and reused. So, and just the, I'm not saying that everybody, all, that all companies should become a B Corp. It's a very lengthy, involved process, but it's something that's worth looking at. There are a huge array of environmental and social issues mm-hmm. under that B Corp certification, and companies need to get a certain number of points to do that.
Well, and maybe, I mean, you know, what's interesting about that, you know, is that maybe some of the smaller plants or companies could use, you know, the sustainability, I don't know, to their benefit, if that makes sense, to put their product on the map to say, hey, this is what we're doing. And I mean, look, you know, that company is getting a mention on this podcast, you know,
yes.
So that's great for them. And it makes them look good, you know, to the general public, it or at least, you know, people have a level of respect for, you know, people who are making clever decisions and also ones that are, you know, positively affect the environment. So that's an interesting way to look at it, I guess.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that companies need to tread carefully. What I see is, excuse me, companies need to tread carefully when it comes to how they're talking about what they're doing for sustainability. So I see two kind of ways that it tends to happen is either they say nothing because they like, well, we're not really sure we're doing this yet, or we just don't want to brag about it.
Right.
Or they come out and say, oh, look, we are on top of this. We care about ESG. We care about sustainability. We care about people, with no specifics to back mm-hmm. it up. And right. then they get accused of greenwashing. Part of the work I do is helping companies refine that message to say, okay, let's look at everything you're doing. What is it wise to say, when and how, so that you tell a sustainability story that makes sense to your employees, to your customers, to all the different stakeholders?
That's key. And I don't know, of course, much about that, except for I have read a little bit about fashion. And I know that there are some fashion companies that got some bad press because they say, hey, this is, it's kind of like a trend. It's a trend, you know, so you can't use it as a blanket statement. But like you're saying, you don't also want to be afraid to tell people what you're doing if your company is trying, right?
Exactly.
So that's
and part of it is sort of being honest about what you've done so far and then where you still have the gaps and where you're headed. And sometimes you got to realize if you're going to speak out, you're going to open yourself to criticism.
Well, I think one point that you're touching on that I think makes so much sense to me is transparency. I think,
yes.
you know, whether a consumer is, you know, environmentally conscious or, you know, anything like that, I think people do like transparency. They want to know, you know, where is it coming from, you know, all of those things. And I can say, you know, that definitely for me, I want to know, you know, and I look at that. And I do think that consumers are becoming more conscious of things like that.
Absolutely. So then it's about how are you labeling your products? What information do you have available to customers?
Okay, well, thank you so much. Is there anything you'd like to add before we wrap up today? Any points you think we missed or?
There's so much more. As I said, the book covers obviously way more than we could discuss here. I just advise anyone who wants to follow up with me, you can find me at my website, jlfgoldstein.com. And at jlfgoldstein.com/discussion, I've got a download for a list of questions about sustainable manufacturing. And it's a fillable PDF, and you can download it and type in stuff. And just to give you ideas about some things to think about.
Okay. And I will include that URL in the video. And then also, where can people get a copy of your book?
Anywhere books are sold. I do sell them on my website. I only mail out to US addresses, but digital versions are available to everybody. That's actually at juliagoldsteinauthor.com, which is where you can buy them. But again, any bookstore, online retailer where you would normally buy books, it's available.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thanks. This is fun.
For more insights on assembling discrete parts into finished products and the people behind it all, visit our website, assemblymag.com. And be sure to subscribe to the podcast to keep up with our latest episodes. We're also on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, so we invite you to follow us there too. This has been Assembly Audible. Thanks for listening.